Liana Fink, based in New York City, is a multifaceted artist who has decided to coax her wild, free artistic instinct into boxes. She combines wit and wisdom into comics that are poetic, insightful, and dead funny. She studied fine art and graphic design at Cooper Union College, and as a former Fulbright Fellow, her work can be found in the pages of Tablet, Lilith, The Forward, and The New Yorker, among other publications. It speaks better for itself, so I'll just stop here and suggest you go check it out. LianaFink.com, LianaFink.com. Now, over the past few years, she has applied her talent to a project about a Bintel brief, which was a feature that ran in Der Jiddische Vorwärts, the Jewish Forward, for the first half of the 20th century. A Bintel brief means a bundle of letters, and it was just that. Readers wrote in with questions for the editor of the paper, Abraham Kahan, who would personally answer them. Chosen letters were printed along with Kahan's responses, and the result was part advice column, part classified ads, part confessional, and ultimately a public forum that united and guided generations of Yiddish-speaking Jews as they made the harsh transition from old world to new. It was considered, oh, even backward, and everybody read it. Fink dusted off this history and held something of a seance for the spirit of Abraham Kahan and his faithful readers. Conjured back to life in Fink's potent magnetic style, these characters are human and as intent on reinventing themselves and defending their right to exist as they were 100 years ago. Boldly drawing herself into the action, Fink weaves a story that is at once deeply layered and brilliantly simple. Fink's graphic novel is called A Bintel Brief, Love and Longing in Old New York, and its comic book format features a poignant interlude of her metal plate etchings. She presented it here in Montreal this past Sunday on the last day of the Blue Metropolis Literary Festival. We sat down afterwards to talk about this book and its place in her career, and joining the conversation was Kat Romano, food historian, host of the Roots and Recipes Radio Hour on Green Room Radio, and co-founder of The Wandering Chew, a series of Jewish pop-up dinners in Montreal. Here's our conversation. We're sitting here in the Petit Salon at the Blue Metropolis Festival, and Liana Fink has been kind enough to sit down with me after speaking for 60 minutes already for just a brief interview for the Tuesday morning after for CKUT. So we're here also today with Kat Romano, who has some questions to ask, too, about Jewish cuisine, which is touched on a little bit in Liana Fink's book, A Bintel Brief, Love and Longing in Old New York. So it's something of an impromptu panel discussion, and it's a real treat. So if I can get each of you to introduce yourselves, I'm going to pass the mic around.
Hi, I'm Liana.
Hi, I'm Kat.
I want to start by asking about something that intrigued me when I was reading the book, which is towards the end of the book, I noticed some drawings, and among them an abandoned pickle factory and an abandoned Jewish deli and an abandoned synagogue, and it seemed like maybe your search was taking you there in this semi-fictionalized version of your life, but I was wondering if you've actually been to these places, and if so, what they're like.
The Lower East Side it's such an interesting place. It's gentrifying very, very fast. It's actually, parts of it are like extremely rich, but it still has these old Jewish things in it, and it's really beautiful. I like going there a lot. You can buy lox, and there's a matzah factory. There's a ton of old Jewish buildings that are shut down, and like old synagogues, and you pass by one day and they're covered in leaves, and the next day they've been exploded, and it's really sad. I was at this really moving and sad party once that a friend of mine was throwing at a building that had once been a Romanian synagogue, and his parents had been these bohemian artists, and he'd grown up in this beautiful abandoned Romanian synagogue, and the party was happening right before it was going to be torn down and a fancy building was going to be put up there. So New York's a sad place to be living now. It's a little too rich for its own good.
So a little bit more about the place that New York has in I guess, North American Jewish history. I was wondering, in your book, the writers to A Bintel Brief, the people who are writing to Abraham Kahan asking for advice, they're writing in 1906, 1907, and they all seem to be haunted by these ghosts from the past, or sometimes living people, potential brides, bridegrooms, parents, sisters, brothers, all these people who are sort of holding them back from really Americanizing or adapting to their new life in the new world. And yet, at some point, Abraham Kahan, this version of Abraham Kahan that you're talking to, identifies himself as a ghost. And I was wondering if for you, do you feel haunted, I guess, 100 years later now as a Jewish person living in North America in the new world, by an old world that's old New York, or by an old world that's like Eastern Europe, the Pale of Settlement, where all of this Ashkenazi civilization was transplanted from?
I think there are a lot of things I can say that would say yes, and a lot of things I could say that say no. And this has risen to the top of my mind that these are ghosts for me, but I love ghosts. And I grew up in Jewish communities. I went to Hebrew day schools and I went to Jewish summer camps, and my extended family was pretty religious, and I never fit in. And I always knew that Judaism was my identity, but it was this very kind of paradoxical thing where my identity was this thing that kind of rejected me as a shy person and as an artistic person. And I got older and I kind of left the Jewish world and I found art and I found the big city, and it was suddenly okay to be a different person. That's the norm in New York and in the art scene. And I discovered these ghosts of people, my great grandparents and people like them, who had come to America, and their identity also was being different and being lonely. And for the first time, I felt like I fit in as a Jew, like I'd found these other Jews who were lonely and strange. And it's really comforting to me that they exist in the city I'm living in.
So I've read in some of your other interviews that you've studied some Yiddish, and certainly you encountered it with a bintel brief, since it is in Yiddish or has to be translated from Yiddish. And I was wondering what your thoughts on Yiddish are and its place today.
When I was younger, I wanted to be a language learner, and Yiddish was one of the languages I wanted to learn. I was also kind of an intellectual. I read a lot, and I learned a little bit of Yiddish in college. And after I graduated college and started to focus more on making art and less on letting the world in, I realized that letting the world in was making me more uptight as an artist. And I felt this responsibility to put out everything that I took in. And I started learning a little bit of Yiddish in order to work on this project a little bit more. And I realized that the more research I did and the more Yiddish I learned, the harder it was for me to work on this project, because I felt like there was so much I wanted to say and so much that I wanted to put into the book. I just kind of stopped reading and stopped learning in order to give myself a little more freedom in working on this book. So I don't speak much Yiddish. While I was learning a little Yiddish, I encountered these tiny Yiddish-speaking worlds. There's the religious Jews in New York, and then there's this lovely place called the Workman's Circle that's old socialist organization that was a big deal a long time ago and still exists, and it's so lovely. And that's where I took Yiddish classes, and everyone's so refined and smart. And I also encountered these people who work for a place called the Yiddish Farm, actually very near where I grew up, and they're these kind of long-haired hippies with payas who raise goats and slaughter them and do various things, and they're adorable and nerdy. And they had some interesting parties that I went to. And now that I've finished this book, I realize that the more confidence I have that comes with age and comes with having been working in this field a long time, the more able I am to take more in again. So I'm reading more again, and I hope to start learning languages again. And I feel this deep connection to Yiddish, and I don't know if it's imaginary or real or where it comes from, but it's, I really love this language.
You say that as you were writing a Bintel brief, you were developing your own feminism. Were those two things related, or did they just sort of coincide as happenstance?
A Bintel brief really was a woman's thing. I know that more women wrote in to the advice column than men, and it's rare that women have a bigger place in a newspaper than men, and that happened in this advice column. But I don't think that writing a Bintel brief was the trigger for me becoming this kind of like 1960s style feminist. The thing that triggered that was the fact that I'm a New Yorker cartoonist, and I've been working at that, and it coincided with working on a Bintel brief. And the New Yorker cartoon world is kind of like, it's like Mad Men full of very, 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 very nice craftsman-like men, not mean at all, but and yet men. And I realized that I have this idea that I'm different from there, and I'm not sure if this is a metaphor or the truth, but I felt like my style of humor and my style of drawing are very informed by the fact that I'm a woman, and I just felt lonely as a woman artist. And then I looked back at the past, and I noticed that all the writers and artists that I loved were men, and it's been kind of an ongoing discovery of indignation and anger and horror, which is liberating. I'm trying to make sure it doesn't become jaded and bitter. And a Bintel brief has this thread running through. I think I'm a certain kind of feminist who, unlike Alison Bechdel, who has a theory that a work of art isn't feminist unless there are two women who have a conversation in it, and the conversation is not a man. My feminist art theory is that a woman should be allowed to be a romantic the way a man is a romantic, the way Picasso was a romantic. Everything he did was about women, and I think he was able to be like that because he knew he had a certain power, and he floated above these women who he made art about. And I was working in this book about at putting these little cameos of men in there, including Abraham Kahan, and shining kind of a melancholy romantic light on them, and trying to have the last laugh as the artist.
When you were writing this, did you discover anything like a Bintel brief in the media organized by more recent immigrants with other language backgrounds?
I didn't, but only because I'm not much of a researcher. But I can tell you that in writing this book, it was at least as much a way of connecting to my friends who are new to America as it was a way of connecting to my past. I feel like most of my friends come from other countries. I feel like for some reason I gravitate to people who feel a little bit other.
Do you think that there are similar resources for Jews of our generation that help answer our questions, or at least make us feel connected to each other, like less alone in questioning?
No. I don't think so. Another person would answer this question differently, but I'm of the school of Abraham Kahan, who felt like this was something that was very, very, very necessary to the Jews when we were this very small community that was very outside of America, and it was necessary in order to make us into Americans. And as we became Americans, we stopped needing the foreword, and we stopped needing the Yiddish language. And it's tragic, but it was what he decided needed to happen. And I don't know if he was right, but it did happen.
Kat, I'd like to ask you, in that vein of kind of encountering Jewish past, you run pop-up dinners and, among other things, are somewhat of a historian and kind of tour guide to Montreal's Jewish cuisine. And what place do you think this has for people encountering their past and renewing it?
Food is something that sticks with the community. Language, as we were talking about, is one of the first things that's lost when you immigrate to a new country. But food is something that remains. I guess it happens in the private sphere, so maybe there's less self-consciousness about it when you're making it and you're among family and friends. So maybe that's one of the reasons why it sticks around. But I think it's a really great way for our generation to connect to their Jewish identity, and to connect to like previous generations of Jews. But I guess also it in reinventing this cuisine, which many people are doing, and I guess which I try to do through these dinners, you get to, just as maybe people are questioning their Jewish identity, you kind of get to create a new Jewish cuisine, a new Jewish identity through this food. Can you tell me why you decided to include the shav recipe in the book, and I guess why you had your character make it as well for Abraham Kahan?
I noticed that Abraham Kahan talked about shav a bunch. I read the part of his autobiography that was translated into English, and it was just so good. And his wife used to make shav, which is a soup made of a leafy green that no one can find in a supermarket anymore, called sorrel. And the through line of the book's a collection of adaptations of Bintel brief letters, but they're connected by this kind of loose narrative in which the ghost of Abraham Kahan, the advice columnist and newspaper founder, comes out of an old notebook full of Bintel brief letters and reads me some letters. And it starts out with him kind of forcing me to notice my past, but it very, very quickly switches from me being in love with the past and in love with this ghost man and wanting him to stay and wanting him to keep reading me letters and him not wanting to stay and wanting to move on and become a 21st century American. And so one of the ways I devise of keeping him and getting him to read me another story, the way, like Scheherazade, is to cook this soup for him.
I know you write comics, you draw comics, and for Lilith, Tablet, The Forward, The New Yorker, and I think you were just featured in a documentary and the Tribeca Film Festival about that. And, could you speak to that, please?
Yeah, I wanted to say how good this documentary is. It's called Very Semi-Serious, and it just premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival. I don't know. It was interesting to be the film crew was filming at the New Yorker the first day I went there to submit cartoons, and the New Yorker is this very small, lovely group of older men, mostly cartoonists, and then the film crew was all youngish women, and I felt kind of watched over, and I don't think I would have kept coming back and submitting cartoons if they hadn't been there. And it's a strange religious experience where you feel like your life matters because someone is watching you and turning you into a story. It really got to the heart of what I love about art. Like, I love the characters in a book because I know that someone is watching them and looking out for them, the author, and I connect that to my life, and I want to feel like that. And I just saw the movie, and it was really powerful, and I want the people of Canada to know this.
Thank you so much for coming, and it was a real pleasure to see your presentation here at Blue Metropolis in Montreal. And thank you, Kat, for talking about your projects with Jewish cuisine here in Montreal.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Tuesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM. It is 7:57. If you just tuned in, that was my interview with artist Liana Fink about her book, A Bindle Brief, Love and Longing in Old New York. Liana Fink was just featured in a documentary film at the Tribeca Film Festival called Very Semi-Serious. To see more of Fink's work, go to Liana Fink, LianaFinck.com. Information about Kat Romano's pop-up dinners can be found at wanderingchew.ca. That's Chew with a CH. And check out the Tuesday Morning After blog for a chance to see some of the graphic novel and hear Liana narrate several passages. Load culture.ckut.ca and click on us under the Morning After's menu.